Hello, and welcome to NATO's Arc of Crisis podcast. I'm Shaw Lalapet, Program Editor at NATO Association of Canada, and your host. Our guest today is Neil Hauer, a Senior Intelligence Analyst working for the SecDev Group in Ottawa. SecDev is a private organization that aims to improve awareness through open intelligence. They do this by building their very own search and discovery infrastructure and conducting expert analysis for their clients. Neil joins us today to answer some of my questions about his career path to the intelligence field. Neil, thank you very much for joining us. So let's get started. Tell us a little bit about your position at the SecDev Group.
At SecDev Group, I'm currently serving as a senior intelligence analyst focused on the Middle East and to a degree on Russia as well, and especially focusing on Russia's role within the Syrian conflict. Syria is my main area of focus, but also a lot of spillover into Libya and Iraq as well.
I see. So what got you interested in these specific regions?
Russia, it's sort of a two-part question for me. I always get this question of how exactly I go from a Russian studies master's degree into a Middle East-oriented career. And for me, I think a big part of it was the Russian aspect of it. It dates back to my undergrad days. Early on, I had to take a language class. Ended up taking Russian language, one thing led to another, really appreciated the history and the culture and the politics, and ended up going through that as a career path into my master's degree, knowing that I needed to have some sort of master's level education should I want to go and pursue an international oriented career. And that ended up being the mainstream of my Russian focus. Syria, I got into sort of vis-a-vis Libya. Back in 2011, I followed the Libyan conflict a lot, and that's where I started following a lot on social media as well, especially Libya. There was the one Wikipedia map. This was back in like the early days of social media updates for these sorts of conflicts, so Wikipedia was the go-to source for daily updates on areas control, and I thought that was really cool. And once that came to an end, I was looking for something else to cover, and Syria was heating up at that point. And I just became, that was in the mid-2012, and I am just becoming obsessed with the conflict and incredibly interested in, basically absorbed everything I could get my hands on regarding Syria itself, pre-conflict, going back to political development post-World War II. And that led, one thing led to another, and then I kept up on it so much and was writing on it in my own spare time that when I eventually saw this opening for the SecDev Group about 2 years ago, I applied for it a couple different times, and then eventually got in.
Were you always keen on getting into intelligence analysis, or was it just a happenstance?
Intelligence per se was not a career that I chose and said, okay, this is what I want to be in. It just sort of became a natural outgrowth of my interest in working on issues related to real-time analysis, essentially. Some of the most pressing issues, some of the most pressing international issues, and especially conflict studies related.
Your entry into this field, was it clear to you at some level that, okay, this is what I want to do, and these are the steps I need to take to get into intelligence?
Entering this sort of think tank / private intelligence world is not really something that you're going to find a guide on. Fairly ad hoc getting into this sort of field, especially as in Ottawa, I'm not familiar with that many other firms that do what SecDev does. This is something I think you find a lot more in DC and Brussels and bigger international hubs. For going into it, definitely not something that I thought about specifically in terms of this is what my end goal looks like, but I did intentionally build up my resume and my knowledge base and my basis of established work through writing articles for a number of different publications. Primarily, there's one run by the NIPSIA, Norm Patterson School of International Affairs, their graduate student website there. I knew it was good for me to have a balance of work out there that I completed that would demonstrate some expertise on this, so I'd be able to, I knew that was going to be important for bringing in evidence of expertise to this pretty competitive, difficult to get into field.
So moving on to the technical aspects of your job, how much and what kind of softwares do you use?
There's not so much software involved in my day-to-day life. There's SecDev Group really has a couple different parts. There's SecDev Cyber, which is all cybersecurity and stuff I really don't understand. And then there's SecDev Analytics, the side that I'm on, which is presently all Middle East, the little bit of former Soviet Union involved as well, but that's all essentially conflict studies and international relations style work. So my software knowledge and usability, there's some stuff we use in terms of social media collection tools off and on that we've gone through a couple different programs. One being we use a program called Tableau for quite some time, but the real complicated stuff, the programming of it, et cetera, is not something I've delved into. And so the hard technical skills, not a lot of them involved in my position.
Would you give us a little overview of your typical work week?
My typical work week will focus around the three weekly reports that we put out, three conflict area watches. So we have on Tuesday, we put out our Syria conflict area watch, which is our most developed and longest running product. And then within the last 4 or 5 months, we've also started up a Libya conflict watch and an Iraq conflict watch. We're both coming out at the later ends of the week. I am the head for the production of all three of these, and I lead the other analysts on the team in going through taking these from 0 to 100 every stage of the week. And so it was a lot of setup initially to get it in this position, which it's in now, where it's basically a well-oiled machine. I just check in with my coworkers to make sure everything's coming along as it should be. I'm split fairly even between writing it myself and editing my coworkers' contribution to it. So it's a fairly streamlined tasking for me at this point.
For somebody to succeed in intelligence analysis in general, what skills do you think they would need?
Open source research is a huge one. That's, I'd say, the number one thing that I'm involved in day to day. I essentially spend all day with TweetDeck open, having 6 or 7 different specific lists I've built for good sources, including local sources in Arabic and in Russian for areas that I follow. The thing about social media is that we're an open source company ourselves, or open source firm. We don't use classified information and only a little bit of human intelligence. And for this is, I think, pretty standard for a lot of think tanks and these sorts of firms. And in order to be competitive in this industry, competitive as an applicant and an employee, you need to be very good at open source research, and especially on your individual areas of subject matter expertise. So even if it's not Syria, even let's say you're really interested, it could be cybersecurity in the Baltics or something like this. You basically pick a topic, you gotta find who the main people out there are talking on whatever the given topic is, and it helps to be involved in the conversation, but especially I'd be able to identify who the good sources are and create a collection of these, and then you'll have something to draw from.
When you're dealing with the kind of information that you do, what kind of a mindset should one have, especially since personal bias can come into play?
Yeah, I think that's a good point with the personal biases, and especially in following something as intense as the Syrian conflict. I mean, everyone, you're not going to remain 100% objective forever. Your best bet is to try and keep that in check as best as you can.
So what would you say are top personality traits?
Intellectual curiosity is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about brainstorming and creating your own interesting pieces on whatever source whatever topic you're focusing on. We do a semi-regular publication, currently known as the Spectra, flash notes for SecDev, and these are really focused on sort of deep dive into investigation, focus on any specific area of interest that we provide through intelligence on. And the ideas for these will largely be, it's something you got to come up with on your own. So I've written them, the most recent one was on signs in Russian media that Russia was gearing up for another large-scale aerial assault on eastern Aleppo, and how they compared to the previous signs of that, when Russia escalated in the past. And these are things that there's not like a guide to doing them. There's a lot of freeform stuff involved in this sort of career path, I think, and it's being able to, A, be intellectually curious enough to find the interesting threads to pull on and the value-added topics to discuss, and B is being organized enough, disciplined enough to be able to say, okay, I think I have a good enough scope of the information that's out there. You're not going to be able to cover 100% of the information that's out there, but you can always add on more caveats and more tangents and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a combination of having both those two skills working together that will allow you to produce really quality and unique intelligence.
So when you're dealing with that many sources, have you ever felt like you're hearing about it, but the world news isn't talking about it that much? Do you have a problem where you're a little angry at the rest of the world's coverage versus the sources, which you deem to be authentic, are saying a different narrative?
In terms of seeing narratives, I mean, the one thing that frustrates me, that is the biggest pet peeve for me that frustrates me to no end, is this sort of contrarian narrative based on, and especially seeing revisionism with regards to the conflict that is really prevalent. It's something I experienced a lot in Russia, especially when I was living there, and then it's also very prevalent in a lot of quote-unquote alternative media sources it'll feature a lot of revisionism, like the entire conflict is a result of a foreign plan NATO scheme, and the protesters were armed from the beginning, there were no civil protests, and everyone's a jihadi except for a heroic secular Syrian army of Bashar al-Assad, or the people who are the only people who can restore and lead Syria. And that's more so something I find to be extremely frustrating, being exposed to this again and again. I mean, I came to a point where I used to argue with that a lot, and you sort of have to come to a point where when you see people who are clearly going down these sorts of narrative paths, where you just have to disengage with them and just say, okay, like, and just tune it out. So you do have to get to a point where you're good at strategically tuning out things that you know are going to do nothing but set you up or can provide any sort of value. It's about walking a fine line between taking in all perspectives and being aware of the other side, but then just cutting out trolls, essentially.
Do you have any parts of the job that you find challenging?
The most challenging thing for me is trying to sort of see beyond just the trees and see the forest, as it were, and I constantly try and zoom back outwards to try and think about the conflict in larger, both regional and international, and just in larger context than just through a narrow lens of, I would say, just looking at the effect of one particular battle or the effect of one particular faction on the war, and trying to constantly—it's a large battle between trying to essentially keep all the different facets of such an incredibly complex region in your head at all times. And this is more so something that I see when I try and an issue that I encounter when I try and write longer pieces for publication or flash notes or things like this, is trying to think of all the different implications and different factors that influence any one given event or theme, and trying to go a little beyond, just doing work that's necessarily a little beyond the scope of our weekly conflict area watches pieces, where it's a lot more just small scope, 1 week's worth of events, going feeding into things, a little bit of deeper analysis, but more so just present day or right up to the moment analysis. And when it's zooming back outwards, which I think is the sort of thing that you have to be constantly focused on and cognizant of in order to not lose sight of the bigger picture.
What do you find the most enjoyable?
I like working on something where you can essentially be following a conflict on the other side of the world, coming in real time during some of the big conflict events. There's been days where I remember back in late July, I woke up one day on a Saturday and there's the rebel offensive that ended up breaking the siege of Aleppo, briefly, was in progress there, and live news of the military advance and buildings being taken streaming in real time. It's this real sort of futuristic Hollywood movie feel to it sometimes when you're just watching something unfolding on the other side of the world like this, and everything's coming in real time, and it's a little, it gets to be a little surreal, but the excitement of it is, of the exciting days and the exciting weeks where there's a lot going on, it's definitely a fascinating and really exhilarating field to be involved in. And this, the whole aspect of working with open source media, and like, people called Syria the first YouTube war because it's the first conflict where this is really being used as very widespread proliferation, to the degree where factions that are involved with this, CIA's Kill missile program, have to upload their videos of their Kill missile strikes to YouTube for vetting by their handler to receive more missiles. Like, all spheres, all levels of the military sphere, so it's really interesting to see.
On the flip side, do you have any negatives to the job?
There definitely can be areas, especially working for a private contractor areas where more work comes in than you really have people to staff it, and you can end up doing quite a bit of overtime and unexpected overtime sometimes, especially. That sort of comes and goes as business goes up and down, and it's something that's more bound to happen in more uncertain periods of the business. But if when there's personnel turnover, I mean, you can end up working overtime, redoing people's work sometimes, because otherwise it just doesn't get out there. Because being in a small firm like that, there's a, and moving up through the ranks and picking up responsibility comes along with necessity to do some pretty intense overtime sometimes. But it comes and goes. Cross my fingers, it hasn't been like that for a couple months now, so I'm hoping that this is going to remain a concern of the past. But yeah, that's definitely something that can happen.
Okay, how many hours a day would you work on an average?
My average days are 8 hours. My average week in the past month, two months has been really good, actually, keeping to that 8 hours a day. In the crazier periods, it can get up towards, like, there was a period where it was every 2 weeks, and this one, when I was doing the entire, it was a more intensive, a longer version of the Syria Conflict Watch, and put it in perspective, now we have, like, a four-person team to work on. There was a time when I did it all myself, 100%, and that ended up being about, every other week, I would put in about 15 more hours than full-time in order to get that. It's a pretty unpredictable thing. That happens sometimes, and of course, as you go along with anything, you do it more times to get the kinks ironed out.
For somebody interested in coming into the field, what educational preparation or skills do you think they should have?
If you want to be taken seriously, especially, you really need the master's degree. Something else I would highly stress is a foreign language, especially in the field that you're focusing on. I'm not fluent, but I'm professionally competent in Russian, and that has been an immense help for me. And then even beyond that, I don't speak Arabic or know that much of it, but I took a couple of courses in it. I learned the script, so I can read the script at least, which has been immensely helpful for just reading place names and names of groups. Proper names, be able to read those in tweets, and be able to iron out some of the problems you get with Google Translate is massively, massively helpful. And I can say that definitely that if you are a young burgeoning intelligence analyst and you're working on anything regarding the Middle East or even international development or anything, Arabic is an incredible skill to learn. It's huge demand for it out there, and it's a lot of work. I have to say that learning Russian has been the longest and the most intensive ongoing learning experience of my life. I still got a long ways to go, but as long as you have reasonable expectations, you just keep plugging away at it, then it's definitely a really, really good skill to pick up.
Do you have any educational courses from, say, universities that you might have heard or your colleagues have taken that they feel that has helped them when it comes to a role like yours?
When I think of the best course I took was a course that was offered at Carleton in my program through an adjunct professor they brought in for just to teach this one course. And it was on violent conflict in the Caucasus. So really, I was really stoked about it because it's a specialized area that I've always been extremely interested in the Caucasus. And this guy who's coming in had just finished his PhD, just finished living in Dagestan in a tiny apartment with four Salafists and going to the mountains to meet their brothers. In the forest, as they say in Russian, euphemism for insurgents. And so having him come in and teach his course, it was the most work I've ever put into a course. And it wasn't even technically a graduate level. This was a fourth-year undergrad level course. It was an immense amount of work, but I learned more than just about any other course I've done. And the ability to engage with a true expert on it was really rewarding. And I fell in touch with that professor, so I would say really look for these. If your school is bringing in an adjunct, which a lot of grad programs, especially specialized ones, will do, if they're bringing in an adjunct professor on something you're at all interested in, then go for it, do it, and because that's it's your best opportunity to engage with a true specialist on the issue. And you can, if it's a fairly small community too, like the number of Western Caucasus scholars out there is pretty small, so to get headway into that group, meeting one of the up and coming ones is really helpful as well.
And that brings us to my last question. So where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
5 years from now, I see myself in not Ottawa, in DC or Brussels or somewhere, maybe in Russia or somewhere in Germany or something, working for sort of a wider scale international firm, being one of these big international hubs. I'd love to have an excuse to do some more field work in Russia. Working internationally is my biggest goal as far as that goes, and becoming more of a media personality. I've had some media appearances so far, but I'm really looking to develop my background in that issue.
And that wraps up our podcast interview today. Neil, thank you very much for giving us a great insight into your world. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will benefit from it.
Yeah, no worries.
And to our audience, thank you very much for tuning in. If you want to learn more about Neil Hauer, please refer to his bio provided on this page. And be sure to watch the space for more podcasts with many more interesting people. Until next time, have yourself a great day. This is your host, Charles Alapet, signing off. Take care and goodbye.